Good morning. It is 11:02 a.m. We are here today, August 24, 2016, in the OBA Hearing Room Suite 907 of the DNA Building in Hagatnya, Guam. For the formal hearing continuation of OPAPA 16-006 and 16-008, Basil Food Industrial Services Corporation versus the General Services Agency. Presiding over the hearing today are Hearing Officer Anthony Camacho and Public Auditor Doris Flores Brooks. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Rodolin Gerardo and Clarissa Roque. Will appellant Basil Food please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Thank you. Elise Iriarte for Basil Food Industrial Services Corporation. Present with me today are principals of Basil, Jeremy, James Zhang, and Michael Zhao.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency, GSA, please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Nicholas Toft on behalf of GSA, with me is Robert Kono.
Thank you. Will interested party SH Enterprises please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Joyce Tang for SH Enterprises, with me is Mrs. Smith. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. So before we take up the closing arguments, are there any other issues as hearing officer I need to address at this time? And then do any of you need visual aids or some extra space or, okay. I'm seeing no from all the parties. So our order of march this morning would just be just like court. Okay, so Ms. Iriarte, because this is your client's appeal, essentially you'll start first with your closing. Will be followed by the purchasing agency for their closing. Will be followed by interested party SH for their closing. And of course, because it's your appeal, Ms. Iriarte, you will have the last word with your rebuttal remarks at closing. Any questions about the order of march? It should be something you're all familiar with. So with that said, then Ms. Iriarte, you have the floor for your closing argument.
Disturbing pieces of evidence that has occurred in this entire case. And that was when I asked Mr. Kono, the administrative counsel for GSA, whether it concerned him that getting only one quotation for the emergency procurement did not fulfill the policies of the Guam Procurement Code and Law to maximize competition and the purchasing value of the territory. His response, not really. That really stunned me, but I think it's a pattern that has occurred in this case. When the public auditor asked Catherine Del Mundo, why is it that there has not been an inspection of SH since they began servicing the EMP program, her response was less than inspiring. You would think that if the health and safety code was so important, it drove public health and GSA to terminate this contract, they would do something to make sure they had a provider that had a HACCP plan, had a provider that even if they didn't have a HACCP plan, they knew what they were doing and were coming into compliance nonetheless. We will never know the answer to that because public health completely dropped the ball on the emergency procurement and ensuring that they had a vendor complying with the law. Another portion of disturbing testimony was something that was brought up time and time again. I asked Mr. Gillen, I asked Ms. Cruz, and I asked Mr. Kono about the money. Did you ever consider the money? What did you do to figure out how much you were gonna spend on these services before you decided to terminate? And even during the duration of the emergency procurement, no one seemed to care. It is the apathy of these two bodies of law, these two government bodies, that has plagued both the termination and the emergency procurement. So we have two events that we are looking at here. One is the termination, whether the termination itself was proper, and should there have been cure. And second, the emergency procurement. Has there been compliance with Guam law? Not just procurement law, but also the Guam Food Code. Remember what's at stake, besides these services, these very important services, government of Guam funds, as well as federal funds, and the way the government of Guam utilizes federal funds. Turning first to the issue of termination, I've cited in my brief case law that talks about how to handle terminations. Terminations are drastic sanctions, so drastic that in the 12 years that Anita Cruz has been with GSA, she couldn't recall another time that that had happened. So you would think, if it was so drastic, so rare, we would have more to evaluate that decision on. Before you is a single line on a single email in the procurement file of the wrong procurement that talks about that decision. Now, a termination is not automatic. Just because a default has happened, the government has to actually do an analysis. They have to look at what is in the government's interests and what is also in the contractor's interests. I presented that in my hearing brief, cited to case law. Now, where is the documentation as to how this decision was arrived upon? There is none. We don't even know who made the decision. When I asked Mr. Gillen, he said, GSA made the decision. When I asked Ms. Cruz, she said, Mr. Kono made the decision. When I asked Mr. Kono, he said, Leo Casil made the decision. We do not know to this day if anybody actually made that decision, except we know that at some point, Basil gets a letter. I talked about that email from Mr. Casil. All we know is from that one sentence. Leo Casil tells Bob Kono, this is to inform you we are canceling the food contract with Basil. No analysis, there's no record of the analysis, there's no record of a discussion, that's just it. So let's talk about what was not considered, first of all. The first thing not considered is the amount of money that the government was just about to pay. Now the government had an idea because last summer it had an emergency procurement. SH was charging $850 for the congregate and $995 for the home delivered. Ms. Cruz testified and confirmed that there is no evidence in the record that the government considered the financial impact of what it was about to undertake. Another thing that wasn't considered, whether these items could be cured. And in fact, they were cured within less than 2 business days. Another thing that wasn't considered was the emergency menu. Now, this is the cheaper option. In fact, if the government had exercised this option, we wouldn't be here today. They would have allowed the dry goods during that two-day period, and Basil would be restored to the A rating and continuing to provide food services at the rate that it bid on. I ask that you look carefully at that emergency menu language, because it doesn't just talk about natural disasters. It allows an emergency menu to be conducted in any circumstances for a dry goods mail. In fact, the testimony was that the government had actually used this emergency menu option in a non-natural disaster situation. So let's look at what was considered. There are only 2 items mentioned in that letter to Basil. One is its derating in July 2015, and the other was the current derating. Let me first talk about the 2015 derating and ask that that history not be counted. The reason for the derating, and that's in Exhibit 10, according to Public Health, was that there was a lack of a HACCP plan. What we know is once Basil had a HACCP plan, it was restored to an A rating. There was an unfair enforcement of the HACCP plan requirements that led to that derating. HACCP requirements were new, a new provision of the Guam Food Code. So new that Public Health, even after all of a number of vendors had turned in plans, still didn't know what certified meant. They were still asking themselves, what does it mean? Does it mean we certify it? Does it mean that we review it and it's certified by somebody else? Now, in the, I believe in March or April 2015, Mr. Gillen tells Basil, you have to have a plan and it has to be certified by someone listed on this department that the department has, a list that the department has. And then Mr. Gillen testified, that list has actually never existed. Exactly how is Basil supposed to comply with the requirement when it doesn't even exist? Now, let's talk about finding a certifier. Now, public health says, okay, we told them. But the testimony is they only told them after they shut down Basil. They only told them who they could use after they shut down Basil. There's evidence in the record that in June, they were telling other vendors, here are the three people. Well, guess what? Two of those people were actually not even certifying plans. The third person, Barry Mead, wasn't even on island. But when he finally came back on island, Basil hired him, and they turned in their plan within a week. There's other evidence of the unfair implementation of the HACCP plan. Exhibit 27. This is an internal email from Public Health. We will not let what happened to Basil happen to other vendors. Exhibit 28. Catherine Del Mundo writing, why are we giving other vendors more time than we gave Basil? Basil was shut down, and after Basil was restored, everybody else submitted their plans, yet nobody else had been shut down for not having a HACCP plan. And I'm not just talking about schools. GMH never shut down for not having a HACCP plan. And even more importantly, SH Enterprises, allowed to provide services to the elderly without a HACCP plan, not just last summer, but in June 1st, 2016. This violated public health's internal policy that 60-day grace period was no longer in effect. That's Exhibit 30 from Tom Nadeau. Tom Nadeau tells his staff, that was last summer. We're now into this food code. We're no longer allowing this grace period. Now, we don't have Tom Nadeau here to tell us that wasn't actually a policy, or that policy changed and they were still allowing it. What we have on the record is that email saying it was no longer permitted. The 60-day grace period was no longer permitted. The other reason in the GSA letter is the D rating on May 31st, 2016. But again, cured within 2 days. Now you have a lot of evidence in front of you about Basil's inspection history. I would submit that what the government is trying to do, and SH is trying to do, is use post hoc justifications. Those are not proper. The basis and the standard of the review for the Office of Public Accountability is what was the decision at the time? What was the basis for the decision? And you do a de novo review of that. We don't look at other things that the government never considered. So the things that government could have done to save $800,000 that it overspent this past summer. They could have done the emergency menu. They could have reinstated with the cure. Section 61018 of the procurement regulation says, if notice is given, an opportunity to cure shall be provided. Now remember, GSA is saying public health, they're really monitoring this contract. On May 31st, 2016, when Basil was inspected, they were given opportunities to cure. If you remember that inspection report, you can cure these violations by June 10th. You can cure these violations by June 30th. There was instructions and a notice for Basil to cure those violations. That is the notice that was given, and Basil should have been given the full contractual entitlement to cure. Neither of those options, the emergency menu or the cure, were given any real consideration in this case. Consequently, the government has overspent $800,000 in the past 3 months. So let me talk about the emergency procurement. First of all, there's a breakdown in communications there. GSA never asked public health for its input before deciding to go with SH. Public health knew SH didn't have a HACCP plan. They didn't tell GSA. Gillen also testified that GSA knew, I'm sorry, no one told GSA of SH's derating last summer. Now, perhaps it was because it was this assessment, but it was a full evaluation. And the government has spent a lot of time, well, the HACCP plan is only 6 points. Well, even at that still puts them in violation territory. That should have been given notice to GSA. Should SH have been on that qualified bidders list? The specifications themselves do not comply with the Guam Food Code. They don't require HACCP. Again, there were no inspections on SH even after the complaints, and I find this disturbing because when we submitted our protest, we submitted those photos of violations. GSA didn't even bother to show public health the photos that we provided showing the violations. There has not been a serious inspection, evaluation of SH's health and safety standards. SH is not a qualified bidder. Again, no HACCP plan on June 1st, no HACCP plan on July 1st, when these services were renewed. There's no evidence of an emergency menu, which is required under the specifications. They shouldn't have been on that bidders list, as I mentioned, because they received a D rating. Now, SH, in the beginning of this case, said, well, we're allowed to charge a premium. Other vendors, I'm sure, would have wanted to charge a premium. Nobody contacted the original bidders from 2014, CALS or LC. Importantly, no one contacted anybody who had a HACCP plan. The only bidder that they contacted was SH, who didn't meet the food code requirements. They never contacted Basil. And this is important because Mr. Kono says, well, I don't consider them responsive or responsible. Where is that determination in the record? And even more importantly, that's a denial of due process. If he is basically saying that Basil is barred from bidding on these services, there is a procedure for that. Instead, we have this very informal declaration, not even written anywhere, that Basil cannot be qualified for these services. That is illegal. So let me get to the law. Section 5215. The government said time and time again that they're prohibited from contacting any other bidders when there's an emergency procurement. We have to look at the plain language because it does not say that anywhere. Section 5215 says, emergency procurements shall be made with such competition as is practicable under the circumstances, and further provided that the procurement agent must solicit at least 3 informal price quotations. Let me stop right there. The government must solicit at least 3 informal price quotations. There is no qualifying language in that phrase. That is a requirement under the emergency procurement law. The government says, well, it says if time allows. If time allows is in the next phrase. It says, if time allows, must give notice to all contractors from the qualified bid list who have provided the needed supplies and services to the government within the preceding 12 months. If time allows, they contact those bidders. It doesn't say you cannot contact anybody else. It says if time allows, get to that list and contact who's on that list. But that doesn't modify any other provision of the emergency procurement law. Those two phrases are essential, and the plain language shows the government did this all wrong. Now, if you have any questions about whether if time allows modifies how many quotations they're supposed to get, look at the procurement regulations, section 3113. That adds the word and in between those two clauses. Again, clarifying that if time allows does not modify the 3-quote requirement. The testimony is they didn't have time to contact 3 on June 1st. Okay, what about July 1st? What about August 1st? You had more than enough time to seek out quotations. You knew how much the government was spending. But not really is the concern. Not really is the response we get from GSA. Lastly, they seek for services for an approval of 90 days. That is also not what the law says. The law says every 30 days seek quotes. One final thing that's been alarming is both the declaration under penalty of perjury that I asked Mr. Gillen about. Because it says if it's over $500,000, you need to notify the Attorney General's office. Not done. The memorandum to the governor. You think that the important information to include there would be, by the way, there's only one bidder. By the way, it's going to cost 2 to 3 times more. But no, none of that information. I asked the public auditor for this case, the memorandum that you received to renew these services. Did you feel that you had enough information from the government? You didn't have that financial information. You didn't know there was only one bidder. You didn't know they didn't even look at who might be complying with the food code and ask those people instead. I want to thank the Office of Public Accountability and the hearing officer for allowing Basil to present its case. We hope at the end of this that you will grant our appeal and find that the government has acted improperly on these two issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Uriarte. Mr. Toff, on behalf of GSA.
Thank you. There's a lot of misdirection coming from the table tonight, right? A lot of hide the ball. I'll start off right away. 5 GCA 5150. This is referred to as the Gillen Declaration that they've contacted the AG's office. If their contract amount exceeds $500,000, read the statute. It's not necessary at all. It's not necessary in emergency procurement. It's a policy by the AG's office. That's all 5150 says, is that the AG's office is supposed to develop a policy when a procurement is supposed to come through them. There is no policy that an emergency procurement has to run through the AG's office. HACCP, a complete misdirection here. Basil got a D rating long before HACCP was considered. Basil got a D rating when they tried to put together a HACCP plan they cobbled together from the internet. Basil got a D rating this year, long after they had a HACCP plan in place. It's because they weren't following HACCP. They weren't following basic food cleanliness procedures. The 10-day period, misdirection again. Look at the statute. This is the termination for default clause that they're referring to in Section 8. Two things. One, it's preceded by a special term of the contract, the 12.9. Special terms trump general rules. I have that citation in my hearing brief that I've submitted. I won't belabor that point. Two, immediately after the termination for default, subsection A, you go to subsection E. It says if the government screwed this up in any way, if they have completely messed up, then if as long as they have a clause providing for termination for convenience of the territory, we proceed as if notice of termination had been issued pursuant to that clause. So they're leaving a lot of important information out here. The evidence shows here that the appellant views the Guam Health Code as a nuisance, as a hoop to jump through, only when and if they're going to be enforced. And in some industries, I can see where that's the case, where regulations like these are just kind of minor pains that may or may not be dealt with. But to echo Ms. Iriarte, remember what's at stake here. This is dealing with the most vulnerable population on the island, our elderly and our Manunco. In the general public, if you had an outbreak of a foodborne illness, there would be outrage. Front page of the paper. If you have an outbreak like that in the elderly, it's likely to be fatal, and probably on a widespread basis. Public health cannot allow that to happen. It must show that it is willing to enforce its laws and its regulations if it expects anybody to comply. And we have the perfect example of that with Basil here. They proved that. They never made a move until public health was breathing down their neck. You go through all the inspection reports. What would it take to get Basil into compliance here? every time that public health did an inspection report on its own, there's a C or D rating. The only times that Basil got A ratings was on a re-inspection after the hand had already been slapped, after they'd already been punished. It would probably take weekly inspections by Department of Environmental Health to get Basil to comply with the regulations here. That's what it seems like it would take. Department of Environmental Health can't afford that. You heard the testimony. They don't have the budget. They have four people to try and cover almost 3,000 restaurants and kitchens on the island. You know, to try and do this sort of every time that we catch you, then you finally clear it up, that's how you treat a kid. That's how you raise a kid. Government's not trying to raise a kid here. We're trying to provide safe and healthy meals for our seniors. And by the sound of things, that wasn't happening here. A change needed to be made. No government can operate like this. They have a person in charge who can't even control their own workers. Doesn't train them until after they get slapped on the wrist. And then blames their failing grade on those workers. You take responsibility for your subordinates. You don't throw them under the bus. You don't blame them when the standards aren't met because you failed as a leader. Same with Basil. When they racked up 68 demerits, who did they blame? It wasn't themselves. They blamed Gov Guam. They blamed bias. I mean, you just look at the summary of the Exhibit C. All the inspections here. D, C, D, D, B, C, C, D, D. You know, the only A's are in re-inspections when they know the hammer's coming down and it's time to make a cure. And then they have the gall to demand to be on the qualified bid list for the emergency that they themselves created. And yeah, it's going to cost Gov Guam some money. Probably a lot. That's what emergencies are. Surprise, emergencies cost more money. Cost us the last emergency, too, last year when this happened. Probably should have had another emergency last February. But at that time, public health decided that they wanted to feed their elderly out of cans from the emergency menu because they wanted to maintain their relationship with Basil. And then you had a mayors all coming together and holding a press conference saying, why are we feeding our elderly out of cans? We've tried all that. We've tried the emergency menu thing. We've tried shutting down. We tried the previous emergency procurement. None of that worked. All the hand slapping doesn't work. But Gov Guam has a higher duty here. Make sure our seniors are not getting fed bugs and metal screws. Make sure our seniors are getting fed from a kitchen where the person in charge can communicate the basic need to wash your hands, to make sure our seniors are getting hot, nutritious meals, not canned goods. Because if there's a major incident that happens, who's going to get the blame? If a violation turned into a serious outbreak, who's the media going to turn to and point the finger at? It's not Basil, I'll tell you that right now. That amount of failing grades, that amount of inspections, that amount of violations, the first question is going to be, what did Gov Guam do about it? And if the press puts out a FOIA request, sees all of this, and says, and you just kept the contract going, just decided to do another inspection in 3 or 4 months, see how that turned out, it's not going to look good. Public health had to act. But even if you agree with Basil, even if you say, oh, it wasn't their fault, it was a total conspiracy, spotless kitchen, they're being persecuted unfairly. Gov Guam, under the contract, still has the option to terminate for its convenience. But there's a lot of inconvenient things that are happening here. It's inconvenient having to re-inspect the kitchen every time that there's a C or D rating coming back the next few days. We don't have the budget for it. It's inconvenient having to write a letter, issue a warning every single time that there's a C or D rating. It's inconvenient having to deal with all these complaints from seniors. Dead flies in the food, screw in the food, roach in a fruit cup, dirty plastic found in the meal served this day. And as you see, Basil's exhibit number 29, that last paragraph that they conveniently left out of exhibit 27, they've gone out of their way to work with Basil to prevent what's happening to them. They've given them numerous extensions, and the same manner will be applied to others as well so that they're consistent. That means that Basil's now the baseline for how we have to treat everyone else on these contracts. And each extension that we give someone off of a violation is a gamble. It's gambling with the health of our seniors. There's a lot of gambling going on right here. It should worry me, and it should worry you. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Toff. Ms. Tang, on behalf of SH Enterprises.
Thank you. Good morning. This is a federal program that is intended to serve a highly vulnerable, susceptible population. These are people who are living alone, elderly individuals, 60 years or older, who are very poor or near poor, and have difficulty with daily living activities. The results of a U.S. National government study show that the elderly who are on this program are at that these meals were received by the elderly meet them the most. 73% are at high nutritional risk. 60% receive one half or more of their daily food intake from these home delivered meals. 25% reported that they did not always have enough money from food stamps from which to buy purchased food. The cost of delivering these home meals that complies with the Guam Food Code, that are HACCP from a kitchen that is HACCP compliant, and that have a nutritionist, a program manager, and a program administrator on board while food is being prepared on a daily basis. It's expensive, but these are the requirements.
Ms. Tang, I hate to interrupt you, but can you please talk closer to your microphone?
Sure. Shall I just open
yeah,
this
can,
up?
Yeah, just
okay.
Hold it up. You want
sorry,
to
I'm just...
Up? You're fine. Just want to make sure
you
capture.
It was tempting.
Is this better? Sorry. The evidence shows that Lee Kwan was not compliant and was rightfully terminated by the government. Let's look at the two witnesses, the testimony of two witnesses who are with Lee Kwan, Michael Zhao and Billy De La Cruz. Mr. Zhao is the president of Lee Kwan. When asked about Section 4.10 of the contract regarding emergency menus, you will recall that question. I posed that question at least two, if not three times. Refused to respond. Finally, the hearing officer directed him to respond. And the question was, are you allowed to serve emergency menus when your kitchen has been shut down because of a DUI under Section 4.10? The second time that came up, with respect to a question about the contract, he was non-responsive. In fact, he asked, do I have to answer that? And I think the hearing officer again instructed him that he had to respond. When he was questioned and queried about the notice of intent to revoke the sanitary permit, a formal filing by the public health. And I think that is an extraordinary action on behalf of our government, listing all of the violations, all of the extensions and relating to the HACCP plan. His response was simple. I do not recall. When examined by his own attorney, his recollection was just fine when he was asked about this document and the issues relating to the revocation of the sanitary permit. This is, Lee Kwan wants to keep what is a $2.2 million over the life annual contract, over the life of the contract term, a $7 million contract. And he wants, they want to be reinstated. But they don't think, certainly Mr. Zhao did not think, that he had to address the grave concerns and the questions raised about his company's performance under the terms of the contract before the public auditor. And even though he was testifying in Mandarin, despite the fact that we know he does business in English, because Betty Dela Cruz confirmed that, the dismissive demeanor came through very clearly. Let's talk about Ms. Dela Cruz's testimony. Ms. Dela Cruz, as you recall, is the program manager for the Corps. We know that she lied not once, but twice under oath. She wants the public auditor to believe that Mrs. Min knew about the emergency procurement the morning of May 31st before Lee Kuan had been inspected and closed down at 12:55 p.m. She wants the public auditor to believe that Mrs. Min purchased chicken that morning, anticipating she would be awarded the emergency procurement 6 o'clock later that evening. The evidence shows that her statements were demonstrably false. Mrs. Dela Cruz testified that Mrs. Min called her at 5 to 5:30. That time is key because at that time the governor had not approved the emergency procurement. Emergency declaration had not been signed. Mrs. Min's phone records showed the call came in after 6 p.m., after the governor signed the declaration. Even confronted with a GTA phone bill, Mrs. Dela Cruz claimed the GTA bill was mistaken. She also testified that Mrs. Min told her that she already had her chicken, 30 boxes of chicken ready to go. She said this twice during her testimony. And apparently earlier on in an affidavit she filed in the procurement record now, which I've not yet located. But what's key is that this was yet another false statement. It was intended to show that Mrs. Min somehow knew that Lee Kuan would be shut down in the afternoon and she would be the recipient of an emergency procurement that evening. The phone records of Mrs. Min's supplier, chicken supplier, Pacific Grocers, owner who is Mr. Han, that was produced, it's exhibit NNO, clearly shows that Mrs. Min called after 6 p.m., Mr. Han after 6 p.m., these are Mr. Han's phone records, from her office, two phone calls, then went and picked it up. The invoice shows she picked up she purchased 35 boxes of chickens on the 31st of May. And it was a house order, which means it didn't go through a salesperson because Mrs. Min called the owner after hours to pick it up. How did Lee Kuan respond when it was caught in its lie? Well, they complained that we should have warned them that we were going to use this evidence to impeach their witnesses. Well, we should have submitted the evidence ahead of time. So what are they really saying? Well, if you knew we would catch us, we would not have told you these lies. Maybe we'll tell you some other lies that you can't catch us in. In other words, they will do anything to keep this contract at any cost. Nothing suggests that the public auditor can rely on the testimonies of Mr. Zhao and Ms. De La Cruz. Let's compare Mrs. Min's testimony. I think Lee Kuan wisely chose not to cross-examine her. The goal of this procurement, the elderly nutrition program procurement, is to try to meet the program specifications, provide good service at the lowest price. A good vendor tries to deliver a product that meets specifications within its budget. For this program, it means we need tasty, nutritional, hot meals prepared in sanitary conditions within a budget. A lot of time was spent going through Lee Kuan's track record of inspections. And this is not, these are completely relevant because it is Lee Kuan's inspections within the period of performance under the 2014 contract. It's not some post hoc decision. These are facts. Facts regarding their performance under a federally funded contract. We know that there were food strikes by prisoners at DOC, that they were spoiled food. So bad that Lee Kuan changed his name so it wouldn't have that bad reputation associated to Basil. Elderly services that for the last year received C and D rating, and only when they were unannounced visits and they were inspected and then allowed to inspect again after those visits, they got A's. They corrected it. But did we see any inspection where they were unannounced and they got an A? They were consistently C's and D's. Yes, they can get into compliance for those 2 days that it takes them to do that. But what is the default rating? What is the default standard? What is the history? What is the track record during the performance of this contract? That is what has to be reviewed, and that is what public health apparently did. Let's think about the people that are being served food. You have the prisoners. They are a captive population. They're not a sympathetic group. And conditions have to be pretty bad for people to say this.
Can I object to this argument on DOC, please?
I'm going to sustain the objection.
I'll move on.
Please move on.
But let's talk about the Mononcos. They too, not unlike the prisoners, are a captive group. Because we all want and have the desire to support the Mononcos. But I think the truth is, many, you know, out of sight, out of mind. And that's the reality. Today we have 1,150 individuals receiving home delivered meals, double the amount of the congregate. Right now we have about 650 congregate meals. These are individuals living on the margins, and as Mr. Kono testified, These drivers are so important. They check up on these Mononcos, these individuals, the elderly, because if they don't, sometimes days go by when no one does. We don't know if they're alive, sick, need help, or have food. It is significant that Lee Kuan cleans up when it is inspected, unannounced. And that is its standard, its default. A leopard does not change its spots. Based on the evidence and the record and the track record, would anyone in this room serve those meals to our parents? Ask yourself that question. The government acted correctly. The HACCP plan is a red herring. Recall, Mr. Zhao was asked why it took 40 plus days to respond to a March 11, 2015 letter requiring Lee Kuan to submit a HACCP, certified HACCP. He did not have a response. Recall that numerous extensions were given. That's in Exhibit J. Again, it is a red herring. The real issue, it's a distractor. The real issue is whether there was basis for termination. Whether, and that is the heart of the matter, Lee Kuan's history and track performance and compliance with the contract terms and specifications. The record of failing inspections repeatedly and not being able to comply with its own HACCP plan. The government properly and rightfully determined that they were not a responsive or responsible bidder for the emergency. Why would you terminate and turn around and seek their services? I don't think you need the law to tell you that. I think that is just common sense. And with the history of performance and inspections, if that is not enough, then what does it take? An outbreak? A death? The government should not have to hold a vendor's hand and keep on telling them what it needs to do to comply. There was, in the opening statement, there were some comments about SH not complying with the HACCP when it obtained the emergency contract. The 60-day, Mr. Gillum testified and clarified, and I'm sorry, I don't recall the email number, exact email, but it was on Mr. Nadeau's email, where he's talking about the 60-day grace period that is accorded to existing, remember the word, existing vendors. Now, I think it was very clear from Mr. Gillum's testimony that existing means those who are offering or serving the highly susceptible population in both procurements, emergency procurements in 2015, SH was not serving highly susceptible population, and was not in 2016, but in 2015, it only served for 30 days. In 2016, it came into compliance within 60 days. It was entitled to the 60-day grace period that was accorded to all other vendors. With respect to the Basil claims that were not inspected. If you recall, there was one of the inspection reports, and Ms. Del Mondo testified that she followed up on the two complaints. One of the complaints was that there was food on the back of the truck, hot food was served. being delivered in a truck that had trash. And the second complaint was that the servers did not have, SH Enterprises servers did not have health certificate. She inspected, she did an unannounced inspection and determined that because of that complaint that was submitted by Ms. Dela Cruz, considered a source again, and determined that those were not valid. Now, I would note that the trucks, Ms. Dela Cruz testified that the photos that she provided those trucks were not redacted. We have requested unredacted copies of those trucks to verify the license plate. Basil has not produced those. And the pictures in the record are not the pictures that the witness testified that she had turned in. Lastly, there was a reference yesterday to Executive Order 139495, the non-displacement of qualified workers under service contracts. And first time I've heard of it, I didn't see it in any of the briefings. I will direct, just so that there is no question about its applicability or inapplicability, I direct you to the Field Operations, Department of Labor Field Operations Handbook, dated March 22, 2016, section 14, small e, 01. With respect to federally assisted contracts for services, I quote, service contracts entered into by state or local public bodies with contractors are not deemed to be entered into by the U.S. merely because such services are paid for with funds received from the federal government as a grant under a federal program. The Elderly Nutrition Program is funded in part by grants by the federal government and locally funded. In fact, I pulled up the grant for 2016. It's roughly about, I think it's about $1.6 or $2 million. $1.6 million, I forget the amount. So it's clear that this executive order does not apply. In conclusion, I think we all have a duty to protect the Malacos and to do the right thing by them. And I think we would all be remiss in our duty if we allowed an unqualified caterer to continue serving the Malacos. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tang. Ms. Iriarte, for your rebuttal argument.
Thank you.
Did not lie. Betty Dela Cruz has been a hard-working food service worker for the past 17 years. What she testified was that on the afternoon of May 31, Mrs. Min told her she already ordered the food. Ms. Dela Cruz further testified that there has been favoritism. How would she know? She worked at SH. What is the evidence of favoritism? SH had a contract for emergency procurement in the summer of 2015 and had 5 weeks notice. Not even Mr. Kono could explain why 5 weeks were given for quotations for emergency services in July 2015. Why else? SH is not compliant with HACCP requirements or the Guam Food Code but gets an award. Why else? SH is not inspected the entire time the government claims there is an important contract for the food, health, and safety of the welfare and of the Manunku. And finally, why is SH getting favoritism? It essentially got a derating last summer and was not shut down. Now, Mrs. Min knew of Betty's statements because an affidavit was filed with our comments. But only yesterday do we get to see these phone records and orders that we did not have an opportunity to research on our own. The government talks about Section 5150 as being a policy. What that says is that when the government conducts any solicitation or procurement, which is estimated to result in an award of $500,000, the AG has to get involved. It's not a policy. It doesn't exclude emergency procurements. The AG was not involved in this case. Both that declaration and a penalty of perjury is pretty alarming that it was not taken seriously. As for the termination, the government cannot even tell us what kind of termination this was. That's alarming, but it's also reflective of the decision-making that was done in this case. If this is a termination for default, and the government has threatened to seek damages against Faisal, damages that it hasn't even attempted to mitigate under these circumstances. Now, I know that issue is not before the public auditor, but Faisal is alarmed by the government's lack of effort to do anything to mitigate these circumstances. Now, Mr. Toff says the government of Guam has a higher duty. Where was the government in exercising this higher duty throughout this case? They're deflecting the decision-making or the lack of decision-making process that should have occurred. I want to get back to the policies of procurement law. I submit there are three main policies. Number one is transparency. Is there transparency here? We can't even tell who made the decision. We can't tell what the decision was based on. They've brought out the record, but they have not pinpointed this was the decision and it was made on these factors. Who else was the decision maker? We played a game of musical chairs on that one. A second goal of procurement law is competition. That's clear. Has there been competition on this emergency procurement? Absolutely not. And finally, has there been value for the services being provided? There has been only one bidder. We know that their price is 2 to 3 times what was competitively bid out. And when that bid was competitively bid out, there were people not much higher than Faisal's price. The OPA's responsibility here is to review these procurement actions on a de novo basis. We ask that the OPA take a close look at what happened here and determine that Faisal's contract was improperly terminated, that they should have been entitled to a cure. The emergency procurements are illegal and invalid. Thank you.
Exactly 12 a.m.
Pardon?
Exactly 12.
Very good. Now, of course, I want to thank all the attorneys for the parties. You've been very professional. I can see the cooperation you've tried to do amongst yourself to get all the facts in this very voluminous case before the OPA, and we thank you for that. We're going to take our decision under advisement. We will issue a decision in writing within 30 days. The parties, now that clock will not start ticking right now the second it starts ticking after you submit or the period of time you have to submit your remedies briefs expires, and essentially the parties will have until 5 p.m. on August the 26th, 2016 to submit their proposed remedies as each party sees fit to do. It's not required, but that's just a deadline if you choose to submit a remedies brief.
26th.
The 26th. That's this Friday. Is that enough time, or does anybody need more time?
Okay, that's fine.
All right. And
you're not looking for recitation of facts in these remedies?
No, we're not. Okay. And you know, please don't try to make this a proposed finding of fact, conclusion of law. It's not. It's just what you think from your respective side. The remedies should be based on what was presented. Okay, and that's it. All right, so don't send me some 30-page document. I'm not going to read it all. We come up with the decision. Okay. Is there anything else? Nothing?
Thank you.
And on that cue, with the musical background,
yes.
We are off the record at noon.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Sure.